doesn't get better unless I change. You see, I was doing this. I'll change when she changes. Right? I'll own my side as soon as she starts owning her side. And guess what happened? Guess what she was saying? I'll start when he starts. Neither one of us would start. Right? Neither one of us would start. And so when I started to try as best I knew how to try, I discovered that she had been trying the whole time. I could like see it different. I could see how hard it was for her to be kind in the face of my own ego, right? When she was asking me to be kind in the face of hers. She never claimed elimination of it. She never claimed to be a saint, right? It's just, there was this fracture. And something happened along the way to the divorce attorney. I actually filed for divorce. I was 5 years sober, and it was on a Friday afternoon, and I signed the papers in the attorney's office. And they were going to deliver it to her at work, at her job on Monday. And I was going to pretend like I go to work, and I was going to go get some breakfast, and then when I was going to go back to the house and move my stuff out, and then she would get the papers while she was at work, and I would be out before she got home. Because I'd had it. I don't know if any of you guys have ever been at that spot where it's had it, right? I'd had it, right? And I had 1,000 reasons why I was right. And I think it was Saturday afternoon. My son and I are sitting there talking, and he thanked me for being in his life. He's my stepson. And I was like, I didn't know what to say. I didn't have any idea what to say. And all of a sudden, in a matter of seconds, my whole vision of what I was doing in the marriage changed. You see, I thought it was about me and my wife. Turns out it's sort of about me and my wife. What it's really about is me and my wife and God. And how my wife and I loving each other makes a home for my family. See, I missed the sacramental part of the sacramental marriage that I claimed I had because I was at a church when I had the sacrament take place. So because I was there, I claimed it was, but that's not how that sacrament works. That sacrament works minute by minute by minute by minute, loving, sacrificing, trying to give her everything she needs if Jesus can empower me to give it to her. I didn't get that. And when I had this conversation with my son, like all these things, I could see stuff I couldn't see before it. And I called the attorney Monday morning and I said, do not deliver those papers. And my prayer changed. And now my prayer to this day is not, please God, help me please help me not get divorced. My prayer now is this. Dear God, help me love her in such a way that she will know that you exist and that you love her. Now, I don't know what that means to you. I don't know if that makes any difference in your life, but that radically changed mine. Right? Blessed are the merciful, for they shall be shown mercy. Blessed are the clean of heart, for they shall see God. There's a lot of interpretations on this, depending on the scholar. Like I said, I read a whole bunch of stuff because I didn't want to do this wrong, right? And I think the one that seems to fit me strongly, or seems to fit well with me, certainly there's some that interpret this as a clear description of sexual morality, right? Clean heart, rather than sort of a lusty heart. But I think it goes deeper than that, right? Fulton Sheen talks about a lot of different things under this particular beatitude. I love that guy, by the way. I think he's amazing. And for me, it's about the purity of my commitment to Jesus. It's about the purity of my commitment to his truth. It's about truly bending the knee, right? Because when I'm around, maybe no one's like me, but when I'm around Catholics at a Catholic retreat, when we talk about Catholics, suddenly I'm a Catholic, right? Now, I hope I'm this guy like Tuesday, right? But these are the kinds of things that my 10th step brings about. It's really easy to talk transubstantiation with all of you. That's no problem, right? But when Jesus calls me to be merciful at work to that one customer who has complained about the last 7 deliveries, that the other 99.9% of customers haven't complained about, which tells me the customer's wrong, not a system error. Am I going to have mercy with that guy? Because none of you are there. You can't see me. Right? We're not having dinner together in the cafeteria downstairs. Right? We're not all presenting our Sunday best. No one's there. No one can see. Who am I then? To me, that's what he's talking about. When no one's there and no one can see and no one cares about a microphone and a recorder and how many Roman numerals are on a chip, who am I then? I think that's what he's talking about. I think that's what he's talking about. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. There's a great writer, man. I ran into this guy, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 months ago. And I just love him. I'm devouring everything he's got. And he was a philosopher and a theologian in Germany right after World War I. His name is Josef Pieper, which is just a cool name, Josef Pieper, you know. And isn't it? I think that's a cool name. What up, Josef? I mean, I get to see him, right? I'm peeping, man. A lot of jokes. Just saying, I love the guy. He's brilliant. And one of the things that he says correlates, at least in my opinion at this moment, the way I understand this stuff. He talks about a new belief. He talks about when someone has a new belief. There were some things that happened before that. And of course, as he's talking about belief, my head's going right to step two. Came to believe. If I come to believe something, it means I'm discovering, I'm digesting, I'm chewing on, I'm accepting something I didn't before. It's new. Pieper talks about how there has to be, anytime there's a change in belief, there has to be a knower and an unbeliever and the new idea. A knower who shares the new idea with the unbeliever. And then the unbeliever goes through a process of either accepting or rejecting that new idea. Man, that to me, that's step two. The big book presented to me the idea. It was the knower. That God loved me in spite of my wrongs, in spite of my sins, in spite of all that drunkenness and all that ridicule and all that wish that, of the stuff that I wish never happened to the people who loved me in my life because directly of me. It introduced me to an idea that God could actually love someone who did the things I did. Not just be nice to, not just passively sort of forgive because I'm a member of the human race and this deal is all about all humans, so unfortunately for God, I'm in the human race, so he's got to forgive me. Like that kind of stuff, right? I don't know if anybody has thoughts like that, but welcome to my brain, okay? This book introduced me to a God who loves me right where I'm at with all the muck on the inside, with all the wishing I hadn't had all the muck on the inside, but really do. You see, Pieper was right. There was a knower, there was a new idea, and there was an unbeliever. Guys, if I get so holy in Alcoholics Anonymous that I can't reach the unbelievers, something's wrong. If I get so much rightness that I can't sit with the wrongness in AA, something's wrong. Right? Peacemakers. When I hear people describe that, I think of like a bridge, right? And when the one side of new ideas about God and love and Jesus and sacraments and the Catholic Church and the beauty of it all can be caromed across that bridge to the unbelievers, and those unbelievers find peace, those are the peacemakers. You know, I look at Jesus' life and that's all he did, man. It seems to me like that's all he did, is he was sitting with people who were downtrodden, who had been beaten up by the religious authorities and had nothing left. The tank was empty for those folks. And all he did was sit with them and love them. Met them right where they were at. We were talking last night out on the deal about one of my favorite stories about Jesus, blind guy. And all the whole crowd, the whole city is yelling at this guy, shut up. Stop calling for him. He is way too important for you. All right? And Bartimaeus continues to shout, Jesus Christ, Son of the living God, Son of David. Son of David, I'm over here. And Jesus went, who's that? Like he didn't know, right? And like, the crowd's like, yeah, don't worry about that guy, right? He's a blind dude. He's a drug addict, right? He's been in here four times. He's been to our home group four times, God, and he's not doing the big book, so clearly he's not willing, so he's not the guy. You know, every guy in this meeting has sponsored that guy. We're kind of sick of him. He needs to get willing before we do it again. Jesus would have none of that. And he walks up to this guy and he looks him square dead on in the eye. The guy didn't know it, by the way, he was blind. But he square looked him in the eye. A little visual humor just as we go through this. Thank you. And Jesus asked, here's the question. Jesus asked him. Now, I don't know about you, it seems so obvious to me, right? He's going to heal him from the blindness. We all know what's coming, right? Jesus, what do you want me to do for you? You're supposed to be the Lamb of, you're supposed to be the God of the universe. You don't know what I want you to do? Right? I love it. Again, I don't know. I'm not a biblical scholar. Other people smarter, more intelligent, more studied, more aware can tell you what he meant. But through the lenses of idiot, it would seem to me that what he was really saying is, are you going to bend the knee? I'll do whatever you need. What do you need me to do? What do you need me to do? Are you? And that's a question for all of us. What do you want him to do? What is it in your life tonight that you need Jesus to touch? Who's the family member that desperately needs prayer that you promise you're going to swear to God you're going to pray for eventually and it hasn't come out? No stones, just saying. No stones. What's that one addiction that you've hidden in the closet that no one gets to see? Maybe none. God bless you. Who's the guy that needs the call from you? Who's the guy that you turned your back on maybe? Because he just didn't line up with your theology, and that's just, you know what? If Father Ed had done that to me, you might have a different speaker tonight. But he didn't do that to me. Father Ed, with his tear in his eye, Mike, this is the story of what God has already done for you. Peacemakers, man, they're everywhere. Blessed are they who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Look, we talked about this Polish priest at my parish when I was a kid. I'm probably never going to be in that situation. Probably none of you will be, thank God, right? So how does this apply to us? I don't know. Maybe a gentle conversation about things that matter, that you know are a little weird, not for us, right, but for the person who's listening. And when they go away, you know they're going to talk about you. You know they're going to be like, that guy is crazy. He's nuts. He's one of those Jesus freak people, right? Like, weirdo. Right? It's funny that they do that to us. We're like, yeah, we need more of that. You know, like that. They think it's moving us away. It's running. It may cause us to run to them, you know. How is being persecuted relevant today? You know? I got to tell you, there's little small things. Like how I treat that customer in front of the other staff members in the office. Because they all know he's being overbearing. They all know that reasonableness would allow me some freedom to go, listen, dude, all right? I'm trying to be nice. And I'm going to make sure I say it like this so I'm not nice, but I'm going to call myself nice so no one can complain, right? How many times do we manipulate our words to twist people? Imagine if we just, in that moment, loved people. The world around us would be like, you're crazy. Why are you doing that? You're crazy. I think that's the closest thing to persecution, at least in today's world. Might get a lot worse. There's a lot of people calling for a lot worse. But right now, today, right? Hey, want to play golf on Sunday? No, I got mass. Oh, you're one of those people, right? Some of that stuff is still with us. But walking that line in love, not self-righteously looking down at them that they're not doing it, but confidently and politely and respectfully and lovingly. Just sharing who we are. Right? Sharing who we are. Rejoice and be glad. Here's what's interesting, right? Blessed, all those first Beatitudes are about blessed are they, blessed are they, blessed are they. The last one, you. He says you. Not they anymore, you. I love that. Blessed are you when they insult you and persecute you and utter every kind of evil against you falsely because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward will be great in heaven. Thus they persecuted the prophets who were there before you. You know, I don't know what my reward will be like. I really have no idea, right? And truthfully, truth be told, without grace, there's no reward. I'm going to need a serious air conditioner where I'm going, given what I've done in my life, right? Next to that cross. There's a great line, though. In the 12 and 12, it's in step 11. And Wilson Powers are writing this thing, and boy, it's just, you know, it's very different than the big book, right? It's not a direction manual like the big book is. It's more of a summation of thoughts after 15 years of trying to practice this and influence of all this teaching that Bill had been under for the last 15, 20 years. So it has a very different tone to it. And on page 98, at the top of the page, Bill says, there's a direct linkage between self-examination, 10th step, meditation and prayer, the 11th step. Taken separately, these actions can bring amazing results. But when interwoven together, they become, ready for this, an unshakable foundation for life. Self-examination, prayer, and meditation become an unshakable foundation for life. And then Bill goes on to say that if we continue to do this, it's likely we'll catch a glimpse. He uses the word glimpse. I love that word, by the way. Glimpse of the ultimate reality, the truth of who we are in God's kingdom. He's talking about Beatitudes. Bill mentions the kingdom of God right there. That's awesome. And as he says that, I'm thinking glimpse. And I'm trying to visualize, like, what does that mean? I don't know about you guys, just know about me. And I have not hit the beatific vision yet. Like, if I see God's kingdom, it's like, oh, there it was. Like a glimpse, right? Just, right, squirt. One of those things again, right? We were talking about that earlier. Like a little flash. A little flash. Right? We have a priest in our diocese. His name is Father Joe. Father Joe is my spiritual director for a long time. And Father Joe's big thing for me forever, was try to get through the Lord's Prayer paying attention to every word. Just let's start there. I have never made it. I'm lucky I get through our, okay? Bills have to be paid, 401k, blah, 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 work on Monday. Like, it just happens. I don't mean it to happen. It is there, right? And I can practice and slow down, get through a few sentences, right? But I'm telling you, I have been unable to consistently get through that prayer without interruption in my head. A glimpse. But I think that if we continue to practice the principles in 10, 11, and 12, with Jesus as our guide, with Jesus as our power, with Jesus as our God in these steps, that glimpse will move to a glance. And hopefully if we keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it and continue to get encouraged by these glances that we get of seeing Him in each other, seeing Him in the newcomer, seeing Him in the beggar, seeing Him in our wives, in our priests, in our church, in our sacraments, that glance will eventually become that gaze. And we will get to the beatific vision, and we will sit in awe of Him for eternity. When our glimpse through this process becomes a glance, and we continue and we persevere, trying to live out through His power, because He is the one that was prophesied of, because He is the one that beat the devil in the desert, because He is the one that cured the sick and the lame and the blind. His words on that hill matter. And if we continue to pray, meditate, self-examine, and reach out to the suffering alcoholic and anyone else in our life, by the way, I think that glimpse will become a glance. And please God, if we continue on from there, that glance will become a gaze, and we'll find ourselves before Him in eternity. I cannot thank you all for what you've done for me. This weekend has been an absolute gift to me. And I hope, I have cards, I hope I get to give you my name and my phone number, and if you ever need anything, if there's ever a time that you need something, I beg of you to call me. I'm not saying I have the answer, but I got a lot of friends, and if I don't have one, I'll go find one for you. But we gotta lock arms and we gotta do this together, because I can't do it by myself, and if you're like me, it's likely you can't either. I wanna share one story about a glimpse I had. I was 8 months sober, and I had lied to a customer. I know that's rare for a salesman, I'm just saying. And the reason I had lied, right, was because I was in a sales contest. And I don't know about you in sales contests. I just know about me in sales contests. And it isn't that I like to join them. It's that I have to win them. Right? I have to win them. Right? And so I'm in this sales contest, and it's about averages. And so the more that you sell on average, you win the contest. Right? And so there's this deal, and it's like a rider in the contract. And I go to this guy, and I'm really close, man. It's really close. That first quarter is ending. I'm a couple of weeks away. I'm at the top of the board. I got to stay there, right? So I lie to the guy. I said, well, actually, in our contracts, you got to buy this, this, and this. He didn't. And then that, of course, raised the price. And that, of course, helped my average. And I eventually won the contest. I know you're all proud of me right now. So I'm doing my four-step. Oh, this thing. I hate this thing. I hate seeing when I'm wrong. And I write it down, and I do my fifth, and I do my six and seven step prayers. And I take those names off that four step, and I turn them on this thing we call an A step, which is just another list, but it's a prayer list. We pray for the willingness to go make those amends. It became a prayer list. So I'm praying for the willingness, which I don't have. And it comes up, and I'm sitting there talking to my sponsor, and he's like, you know, you got to make that amend. And I'm like, well, I know I should, but I don't know if I gotta. That's very different, right? So you're saying if I don't make this amend, God's going to get me drunk. He said, no. This has nothing to do with you and booze. This is about your broken soul. You want your soul fixed? You do the deal. You don't want your soul fixed? You want to live in that rat race? You want to live in that craziness? Good luck. So I call, his name is Joe also, so I call up that Joe. Not Joe Friday, my sponsor, a different Joe. And I say, hey, Joe, you got 10 minutes. I need to come over and talk to you about something. It's really important, and I'm hoping that you have a few minutes. And if you can't make it today, next week is fine, or even next month, really, if you're busy. We can delay this as long as you'd like. It's up to you. I don't really care. And he said, no, why don't you come on over later this afternoon? Sure, that'd be great. You know. So I pull up in front, and I'm saying this prayer out in the car. Get me through this. I don't know how it's going to end. I don't know what to do. Just get me through this. And I go in, and I sit down with the customer, and I said, he goes, are you okay? Like, I don't know what was going on with you. You know, a little weird on the phone. I said, no, everything's fine. Trust me, it's okay, you know. And he says, what's going on? And I said, well, I owe you $750, which doesn't sound like a lot of money today. But when you're absolutely flat broke and you're new in recovery and it was 30 years ago, that was a lot more money than it would be today. I was scared to death because I didn't have it. I didn't have it. I said, I don't have the money. I said, what I have is $250, and I'm going to leave that with you. And then in 6 weeks when I get a commission check, I'll pay you the balance. But I got to make this right. He's like, what are you talking about? I said, okay, on this contract, I said, I lied to you about some of the particulars in it. And I was in a sales contest trying to win the sales contest, and I lied to you about what you needed to buy so that I could win the contest. He said, why are you here? And I said, okay, I was in the sales contest, and I lied to you. I was like, what are you doing? He said, no. I know why you're here, right? But why? I wouldn't know about this. Why are you telling me this? And I burst into tears. And I never did that. I mean, I never did that, right? I mean, I was someone who always tried to retain the lie of composure, right? And I said, I'm a drunk. I'm a filthy drunk. And I stole from you and I lied to you and I don't have the money. I only have this. I'll pay you back, I promise. So, but I got to do something if I'm going to get a different life. And those boys I met in Alcoholics Anonymous, they promised that if I actually did the work, not just talked about it, not just read about it, not just prayed about doing it, but actually did it, that God would show up and give me a different life. And he said, can I tell you a story? And I was like, sure, that's okay. Like, I didn't have any idea what to say to the guy, you know? And so he goes, hey, when I was a kid, my brother and I used to go pick peas. And we had this baskets. And he said, it was really weird. He said, it'd be almost like an unconscious movement. You'd just start going and start going and start going, and you would almost just didn't even recognize you were doing it. He said, and you'd go all day, and every basket you filled up, you got a quarter for. And there were two bells that rang. One with 15 minutes left to pick, and the second bell was when the pickup truck was going to come by, and you better be in the back of that pickup truck because it is a long walk back to the farmhouse. So one day he says, I'm picking. I'm not even paying attention. I'm having a good day. There's a lot of baskets that are filled up to this line. I'm going to get my quarter for all those baskets. I'm excited. He said, and off in the horizon, I could see this gully, and there were railroad tracks that ran across it. So I knew it was like a bridge. I hear this horn, and there was a guy, and he's coming, and I see this guy. He had a big 10-gallon cowboy hat on, and he rolls off this train. He was a hobo running around the United States. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, that was weird, you know, and he keep going. He said, and all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, Mike, I get a vision of this guy down the row that I'm picking, and the farmer makes me stay in the same row so he knows which ones are picked. And he's got his hat off, and he's shoving peas in his hat. And I got to tell you, I start freaking out on this guy, like, in my head. I'm like, hey, man, those are my peas. This is my row. Like, what are you doing? He says, I lose my rhythm, and I can't do anything but focus on this guy. He says, and then I hear the bell ring. And I look down, and I know I'm never going to fill up this basket to get my quarter. I'm just too far below the line. I'm not getting my quarter on this, and I'm raging on this guy in my head. So I start walking back to the road, and I hear, hey, kid! Joe says he turns around, and here's this old guy with this 10-gallon hat filled with peas. And he goes up to him, and he dumps the peas in his basket and fills it up to the line so he gets his quarter. He said, the guy didn't know about the quarter, right? But he pokes me in the chest, Mike. I'm a kid. He pokes me in the chest. And he said, remember that, kid. Somebody gave you a hat full of peas one day. And someday somebody's going to come knocking on your door and they're going to need a hat full of peas and you better give them one because somebody gave you one once. You know what I mean, Mike? And I was like, no, I don't. Peas? He said, you can drop checks off here every day till the day you die. I'm never cashing them. He said, the honesty in your eye right now is worth the recompense. The honesty in my eye? I'm the liar. Did you not hear the story? He said, by the way, if you ever need a job, I want you to come look for me. We could use, ready for this? An honest guy like you around here. No, I'm the thief. Sir, I don't know if I made that clear. Right? He didn't see that at all. I didn't see that at all. And he says, by the way, one other thing. I said, what's that? Forgive me, I know we're just outside of a church. I want to be respectful. But he said, one more thing, Mike. God's bigger than you and he's bigger than me. And he sure the hell is bigger than $750. And he got up from his desk and he walked around and stood in front of me. And he went like this. And I stood up, and I'm a big guy. That man was enormous. And he put his arms around me, and he hugged me. And as he hugged me, I remember having two thoughts. I cannot believe this is happening. And the second thought was something along the lines of, don't get snot on his tie. He just cut you a slack. Just cut you slack for $750, man. Don't blow this, right? So he grabs me by the shoulders and he pulls me back a little bit and he said, one last thing. He pokes me in the chest gently. He said, I'm giving you a hat full of peas. And someday somebody's going to come knocking on your door, Mike, and they're going to need a hat full of peas and you better give them one. Because somebody gave you one once and you didn't even ask for it. As our world is dying and we're the blessed ones, we've met the maker of it. Our job is to let him love us and be filled with his love and do all we can to give that love to the people around us. Whether they understand why, whether they respond or reciprocate, not the point. Three rules in life. Do everything you can to receive God's love. Do everything you can to give it away. Rule three, spend the rest of your life repeating rule 1 and 2. God bless you all. Have a good evening.